League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Don't sweat the technique. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Texans signed somebody just a moment ago. Cameron Wolf, go Cougs. Free agent Arthur Mollett.
Who the f*** is that guy?
That's not nice. That's not nice, Brian. Why'd you hit that sounder with Arthur Mollett?
Who the f*** is that guy?
Did it again. He's there for training camp. Training camp veterans report tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later.
Good. You having a little party?
He's grilling. He's doing the burgers.
Head's on fire today.
He had them ready to go. You know it's football season when Brian starts hitting all the sounders.
Let's do it. Okay.
Mollett had a strong 23 season, says Cameron Wolf, as Ravens slot corner and blitzer, but limited to three games in 24 due to injuries. Interesting they brought in a nickel corner.
Yeah.
I feel like Petrie's there, and then they drafted that guy who can kind of play all over, but more of a nickel guy. I thought they would have more needs at outside corner. I know they signed that guy who, you know, Damon Arnett, who has a history of trouble.
Right.
But, you know, somebody to compete with him for the, you know, third corner spot, outside corner, to me would have made more sense, but maybe they love him as like a special teams guy, or maybe it's just Petrie insurance.
Yeah, I think that for whatever reason, I don't mind the fact that until you have some guy that stands out above all others that you keep bringing in, especially during camp, you bring in as many options as you have, and hopefully you get someone that rises to the top of the list, and you go, oh yeah, clearly that's the guy that we need to go with. But yeah, aside from the two outside guys, and you know what Petrie's going to do, if you don't feel comfortable with the guys on your roster right now, I'm all for it. Bring in some veterans.
Yep, 100% agree. All right, Astros good from the Seattle series. Obviously, the way you leave Seattle leaves a good taste in your mouth, and being four games up, much different than two games up, yesterday was massive. I mean, I wasn't feeling good there in the top of the fifth inning, trailing 3-0. Hunter Brown's about to leave the game. Brian Wu's delivering. All-star Brian Wu. But the Astros were able to come from behind, win the game, lead in the division four, little bit of breathing room. What were some of the good takeaways you had, Blankers?
Man, I'm with you, too. I was texting my buddy who's a diehard Astros fan, and I'm like, is it me? Or do I just have zero hope that down three runs with Wu on the mound and Brown struggling that this one's over? And
he's like, it wasn't just you.
He's like, yeah, no, I feel that too. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't see the explosion coming. But I will say this, the goods for me, Walter was fantastic. Bullpen on Sunday was phenomenal. Five innings of scoreless baseball. Victor Caratini, of all the guys, when we say where would you be without this guy, Victor Caratini just continues to absolutely live up to, I mean, exceed expectations. 7-for-13. I mean, three ribbies yesterday. He had 2 3-hit games. He had a hit in every game in the series. Wherever you put him, he's hitting. He's been a huge addition catching. He's there. Trammell yesterday with the 3-for-4 day. And then kind of under the radar, but I replayed it several times, and I know they reviewed it. Whitcomb's slide was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I have my note for that was cool Whitcomb slide. But that was impressive. Like, yep. How you see it every now and then, like on baseball, like highlights, or maybe even sometimes some baseball bloopers, where you have a runner on the heels of another runner, like you saw yesterday. I thought that was disaster. I thought both guys were about to be thrown.
Exactly.
Out. I really
that was
did.
That was my first thought was, uh-oh, here comes this week in baseball, and both guys are going to be doing this tumbling, like I fell out of a guinea sack thing, where they both get tagged out. But when you look at and both plays that were replayed over the weekend that were fantastic, the one that I forgot to write down, but that it falls right into it, the Trammell to Dubon relay at the plate, and then they got it right, but his foot never really touched down in time. But both of those plays were fantastic.
Great challenge. I don't know if you really had a choice to not challenge. Like, it was late in the game. You had a challenge. Like, I think they challenged even if they were like 90% sure he was safe. But credit where credit is due. Like, he challenged the call. He got it right. Bang, bang, play. Remember when people were saying Mauricio Dubon doesn't have a very strong arm?
Yeah.
Well, pretty strong arm, that Mauricio Dubon. That was a fantastic play. Although I'm tired of watching Cooper Hummel play left field. I think, not that he's, you know, not that Altuve's great, but Cooper Hummel with the batting that he gives you too, like the hitting he gives you, not a huge fan of Cooper Hummel. I think I'm over Hummel.
That he gives you, or are you being generous that he tries to give you?
They say they like his at-bats. I don't.
I don't either.
Like, he works counts. I'll give him that. He works counts. He just doesn't get hits.
Listen, man, at a certain point, we'll get. I'm sure we'll talk about Dana and everything and what where they go from here. But I'm with you. I don't need to see Cooper Hummel. And that's even on top of the fact that Altuve, going back over his shoulder yesterday, did not look so graceful on that ball that he didn't get to, that I thought he possibly could have gotten to and gotten a glove on it. But overall, I will live with Jose Altuve because of what he brings offensively in left field, as opposed to the Cooper Hummel experience anymore.
Yeah, the guy tries hard. You know, he's an energizer bunny. He means well. Like he's a good guy.
Just say bless his heart and move on.
Exactly.
He just doesn't get hits. He just doesn't hit the baseball. Like he doesn't play good outfield. And not that Altuve does, but Altuve is gonna, you know, he's gonna give you an OPS of 800, which, you know, I never doubted that he wouldn't give you an OPS.
I think we got to bet to the contrary.
/yes. 713-780-ESPN. I had all of those that you had as well. Taylor Trammell, man, like that was his coming out party, hopefully. Now, he did it against his former team. Like, was that some added? Maybe. I think that stuff in baseball can be a little bit overrated. But the game that he had yesterday was awesome. His baseball savant stuff isn't awful. Like, I think he's proving that he's at least a capable, at minimum, bench outfielder on a big league roster.
He needed that as much as they needed that. But I think the combination was at the exact right time. That I hope that he can build on this. Because remember, against the Dodgers, one of his other ex-teams, he stepped up, made a really big defensive play. And you just hope that somewhere, because you really don't have options. We just got done bashing Cooper Hummel. You need Taylor Trammell to be that guy, at least for the short term. Because you just, Chaz is still getting his feet wet again. But at the same time, you've got to have someone that can man center field, and he can do that. If he shows any kind of offense at all, he's your best option right now.
He woke up today with a 104 OPS plus, which says he's a better than average offensive player. Now only 39 at bats, so like let's not throw the parade, but that's better than what I thought he would provide at all. You know, so I'm pleased with that. He has some thump. He's got some power. Hitting a ball out there is no small feat. And then also had the extra base hit later in the game. Really encouraging to see that from Trammell, especially with Myers going to be out for weeks. So, like, that's helpful. Caratini, echo that one as well. My note on Caratini, professional hitter. Like, I said this a few weeks ago, and I saw Apollo Dez mention it first. And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good take. He's kind of Michael Brantley light. He's not as good as Michael Brantley. He's not, you know, as professional a hitter as Michael Brantley. But he's like a true value version of Michael Brantley.
The first one yesterday, top spin over the shortstop, just kind of went with it, shoved it into the over the shortstop and into the gap for a hit. And you're like, you know me, I've been hammering this. Enjoy your time with Victor Caratini this year. He's already done so much that someone's going to make him a starting catcher next year and pay him way more than the Astros are going to be willing to pay him, because he has been a stud.
Could it be the Astros that give him the starting
position? There's that Yiner conversation that we just talked about.
I know. Like, it's going to be that to me, if we, like, as we look on July 21st, is the second biggest storyline for the Astros offseason. And look, we'll have that conversation in due time. First one would be Fromber. Second one is, who is your catcher going into 2026? Mm-hmm. I think that's storyline two. But to kind of piggyback on the Taylor Trammell outing as well, mm-hmm. I felt like yesterday was a Dana Brown game. Like, it was, oh, okay, like, look at these gems that Dana Brown has found. He signed Victor Caratini. Dana Brown was the guy that went out got Caratini. He had a 3 RBI game. Trammell was a guy. He traded cash for Taylor Trammell, I think, ahead of the Rule 5 draft because the Yankees couldn't protect him. He's got 3 knocks, a homer with 3 ribbies in that game. You look at the bullpen, Caleb Ort, which the bullpen yesterday, 5 shutout innings.
Yep.
Tip my cap to that. Caleb Ort was a Dana Brown find. Brian King, a Dana Brown find as well. And those guys combined for 3 shutout innings after Hunter Brown was chased after the 4th. Yesterday, in my opinion, was a Dana Brown game.
Yeah, no, and I mean, the stretch a little bit, because he hasn't lived up to billing yet. But Christian Walker is starting to feel the burner on again, where he's heating up a little bit, and he gets the home run that breaks the tie and gives you the lead. So regardless of who that signing was, he made that deal happen too, and thankfully Christian Walker got them back in front when I didn't think they had any chance.
Yeah, Walker was on my good as well. Walker's having a hot July. 327 average, 368 on base, 500 slug, which, I mean, that's an 868 OPS. That will play at first base. Now, Jose Abreu in year one with the Astros also had a hot summer. So I'm not like, oh, yeah, Christian Walker is back. I mean, I kind of play with that on social media a little bit. But, like, I'm not going to lose my mind about 12 games in July and say that Walker's what you got when you signed him for $60 million a year. But do you have more confidence in Christian Walker now than, I don't know, 21 days ago?
I certainly do. Look, I think that, you know what, credit to, and all the congratulations in the world to him and his family. But I do wonder if he would have stayed hot, because now he's picking it back up again. But if he stays hot and his wife doesn't have a child at that time, I'm not saying this to be facetious. I mean, again, he did the right thing, totally 100%. Right. But I'm just curious, because of how hot he got after that Dodger series, that if he sticks with it, if this isn't the coming out party of Christian Walker in July.
I'm actually with you on that. Like, baseball's a repetition sport. Hitting's a repetition thing. Like, you all of a sudden, you're not hitting a baseball for 4 or 5 days.
Yep.
That matters. Like, that's something that would show up. So I don't disagree with that stance at all. Brian, do you have some good?
Yeah, I mean, most of what I had, you guys already mentioned with Brandon Walter, and then the Shea Whitcomb slide and the Mauricio Dubon relay throw. I also had Altuve listed. Bad on Friday, but Saturday and Sunday went 4-for-9 with 2 walks, 4 runs scored. Pretty good closing stretch there to end the series. And then also Hunter Brown's velocity. Like, that was obviously a big storyline going into the All-Star break with the way it dipped in that Rangers series. But he had 99 once on the broken bat bloop. He had 97 and 98 pretty consistently, it felt like. So I'm not as worried after that start about his velocity.
Let's expound on the Hunter Brown conversation. Like, what we saw yesterday with Hunter Brown, does that encourage you going forward? 2 bad starts before the break. Velo was down. Yesterday's line score was not good. But did you see enough from Hunter Brown that gives you confidence going forward? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. So Hunter Brown had 2 bad starts before the All-Star break. Pitched him on normal rest, but moved him up a day, which is how Lance McCullers got hurt. But they did that right before the All-Star break. I like the move, like try to get an extra start out of one of your best starters. I thought it was fine. In hindsight, I would have done it over. I wonder if they would have done it over again, because he didn't look good against the Rangers. Was fatigued. Fastball was in the mid-90s, 93, 94 even. And yesterday, like Brian mentioned, the velo was back. It started to dip a little bit, but I wonder if that was because the workload got, you know, heavy and the Astros weren't putting up much of a you know, fight offensively early in the game against Wu, and he kind of got tired because he was being worked a lot and then worked often without tons of, you know, time to catch a breath in the dugout. What you saw from Hunter Brown yesterday, is that enough to give you confidence in the rest of his season?
It gave me, yeah. I mean, it kind of put my mind at ease a little bit, because I was thinking that, look, we've seen these things play out and end horribly in terms of a guy that just starts to run out of juice and then just doesn't have it, whether it's a dead arm or worse. That you would lead yourself, at least in my case, to have a whole lot of fear for the rest of the season. What I saw, and I said it and I tweeted it, I think, in the first inning, was the minute I saw the velocity back up, because the last start, or even the last two, the velocity even in the first inning wasn't what it had been. The fact that his velocity was back was really encouraging to me. And I think that the other thing, when you look at pitchers, especially when they have more than their slotted time off, the first thing that is noticeable is the fact that the control might be a little off. Did he get squeezed a little bit too, especially at the bottom of the zone? I thought so. I thought that, you know, Wu was getting a lot of calls at the bottom of the zone that were clearly not strikes. Hunter was throwing similar pitches, wasn't getting them. But overall, I think that what I saw, and the fact that I can live with and basically have excuses for,
yep,
the reason why his control wasn't what it has been, I think, yeah, there's plenty. There's enough on the bone there for me to say I'm not concerned about Hunter Brown.
Yeah, I don't love the two walks and a hit batter in four innings. I'm with you there 100%. I actually had Hunter Brown's outing yesterday in my good. Like, the line score's not good, but what it means going forward, I was encouraged with what I saw. And even the innings, like, he gave up the runs. Like, the big inning was the third inning. But if you go back, I went back this morning and watched the watched that inning play out. Master Boney, who I hate that guy, reminds me of David Eckstein, but he squeaks a single past Altuve. Like, that's a BABIP. Like, he got BABIPed there. Like, that was a good pitch. You get a weak ground ball that squeaks into the outfield. The next hitter was the J-Rod infield single.
Yes, it was.
Which, like, you know, maybe Pena makes that play. Maybe Dubon made the play against Master Boney instead of Altuve to lead off. I don't know. But you had a very soft base hit that squeaked into the outfield. You had an infield single. You allow the stolen base, which I don't love that on the Yiner Diaz front. Don't love that on the Hunter Brown front. Hold some runners a little bit. And then you walk Raleigh with first base open. Like, I don't hate that. Mm-hmm. Like, Raleigh's a dangerous hitter. He's far more dangerous than Jorge Polanco. But then Polanco gets that single that just barely goes over Altuve. Barely. So you get a two out, two RBI single. You're a pitch away from getting out of that inning, which was a bunch of weak contact. So, like, the third inning doesn't worry me. The fourth inning, he hit Garver to start the inning, walked a guy, and then the Julio Rodriguez two-out seeing guy single where he squeaked it up the middle into center field. Like, that was a bunch of weak contact. So I was encouraged, actually, with Hunter Brown. I thought it was a good hook by Espada to lift him after 89 pitches. Like, you have to baby Hunter Brown.
Yep.
Like, he's not Fromber yet. He's not a guy who can log 200 innings yet. You need the best 170 innings out of Hunter Brown. You don't need 200 innings and getting 80% efficiency out of Hunter Brown. So I like the hook.
Let's start there in the fact that you could have continued to roll with him like you've seen Joe do in the past a little bit, throwing Hunter Brown for an extra inning here or there. But if you get him over 100 pitches, whatever he's been dealing with going into the All-Star break, there's a chance you come right out of the All-Star break and you compound it because not only did you put him back out there, but now you know he's at 89, but suddenly something goes wrong in that inning or he gets caught in a couple of deep counts and before you know it, he's at 104, 105 or worse and you're like, oh God, now I got to get him out there, but I already know that maybe the damage is done because now I put a lot more tax on his arm. So I like the hook when they pulled him. I think that when you listen to his comments after the game, he himself felt very encouraged by the outing, and I think it all starts and ends with the velocity. We've said it over and over from McCullers to others to even Javier and guys now. If you see a guy that's doing their rehab starts and their velo is 3 to 5 miles an hour slower than what you had seen them previously, it's a concern.
Oh, yeah.
So the fact that he comes out of the gates and he's already pumping 98, 99, you're like, okay, I can take a
diesel.
Deep breath down.
Yeah. That's not Hunter Brown. That's the diesel. That's the diesel Hunter Brown.
That is right. That is the diesel, you know, steaming down the tracks.
Uh-huh.
And then for him to basically reference what you said, I gave up some CNIs and some squeakers. And at the end of the day, you tip your cap, you got to live with it. But at the same time, he wasn't sitting there going and lamenting on the fact that, yeah, I just didn't have my stuff and I didn't have this, I didn't have that. I think that's all you needed to hear and see about the fact that I think he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I do. I was encouraged with the start. The box score to me looks way worse than he actually pitched. To me, he looked like the first 17 starts of the year. He didn't look like the last two starts prior to the Seattle series, the last two starts before the break. I liked what I saw from Hunter Brown.
To be honest with you, watching the end of that, when before they pulled him, my only concern had nothing to do with Hunter Brown. My only concern was, do they have enough arms in the bullpen? Are they going to be able to soak up the fact that you were probably expecting to get at least six out of Hunter Brown today, and then the bullpen goes and spins you five scoreless?
Yeah, they bailed you out. The bullpen bailed you out. Because I'm with you. Like, I'm with you on that. I mentioned the hit-by-pitch to Garver to lead off the fourth inning. Do you think that was retaliation?
Well, I think you tweeted it before the game, or someone tweeted before the game. I don't know. Maybe it was either Manny Fresh or Schwab.
I saw Schwab tweet it, too. Could've
okay, yeah, a couple people had said, I think that the benches are going to clear today, and there might. Look, even Lisa asked me when it happened. I said, I mean, Astros took two, and I'll tell you what, we didn't get to it, and I didn't put it down on my actual list. The Matthews hit by pitch was scary.
Oh yeah,
he lucked out so well to get that thing off the ear guard, that the extended ear guard on that helmet. I cannot believe that pitch didn't do more damage to him because he turned flush into what could have been a shot right off his jaw.
Yep, Then he hit the guy hit short the very day. I don't think Seattle was throwing at the Astros. Like that to me wasn't a spot that you're throwing at them. Like you're up two runs. That's the 8 and 9 hole hitter.
Right.
Like that was not a time to be thrown at. I do not believe that Seattle was throwing at Houston.
And I think Blummer
I
was
do
the-
believe though that Hunter Brown hit Garver on purpose. I do think it was intentional, which I don't love the spot. I don't love hitting the leadoff guy, but I do think that was his way of taking care of the guys, taking care of the clubhouse.
Maybe so, because again, you're not going after and going after their biggest names either, and they, you know, the guys that they hit
yeah.
weren't the big names for the Astros.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so maybe that is the case, because I did look, it did cross my mind when he hit him, and I'm like, and it ended up hurting him because of the fact that, you know, he subsequently then gets another guy on base and then ends up giving up runs because of it, where that hurt you. But maybe it was, because at a certain point, I thought it was to the point when you just made about the fact that you got the guys hit back to back. He obviously was losing control of his pitches, and Blummer, as an ex-player, was quick to say, hey, look, I don't think he's doing any – and TK, too. They both were adamant. I don't think he's doing any of that purposely. When you saw the grip and everything else, yeah, not ideal, and when it's the Mariners, it makes you think a little bit more, but I'm fine with the fact that they retaliated.
Yeah, I don't love the spot, though. Like,
right.
I'm 60-40 that he hit on my purpose. I don't have a high degree of confidence because the spot's kind of questionable. But I could see Hunter Brown ticked off with what was like an unlucky third inning, and it's like, okay, well, now I'm ticked. They scored 3 runs off of me that were like, you know, soft contact, soft contact, soft contact. I'm ticked. You hit 2 of my guys the night before. I'm going to drill you with a heater.
Before I get out of
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did. Like, I think it's 60-40 that Hunter did it on purpose. And like you said, I never have a problem with that. You're going to dot my guys, I'm going to dot you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you on that. Texture, how do you manage Hunter's innings until the postseason? I think kind of like a spot I did yesterday. He needs to live 85 to 95 pitches, not 95 to 105 pitches the rest of the year.
I was going to say, this is a game-by-game thing. But for the most part, where in the first half of the season, you were a little bit more leaning towards, I can get one more inning out of Hunter and I feel like he'll be fine. This is one where you got to border on the side of caution and go, from not this point forward, if there's even a question mark for me,
yep.
I'm going to sit him down and get somebody else in there.
100%. I even like the idea of a 6-man, even if the schedule says you should go 5-man, I like the idea of a 6-man. Hunter Brown pitches a lot better on 5 days rest than 4 days rest, by the way, which is conducive to a 6-man rotation. So you can also limit his innings that way, keep him fresh. Because I don't want an overused Hunter Brown. Like I like you said earlier, if it means that Hunter Brown pitches 20 less innings, that's too much because he doesn't have enough starts left. But let's say Hunter Brown pitches 15 less innings the rest of the season because you're trying to kind of baby him, you're trying to keep him at 100%, not 90, 85%. I'm okay taking him out 10 pitches sooner than what you normally would, because you need him at his best in October. Like that's your goal. That's what you aspire to be.
I went off on this late last week and said exactly what you said. I was adamant in the fact that you go nowhere if you don't have the best version of Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. No matter, and yeah, you're getting guys back, and yeah, you may do some things to fortify your lineup as well. But we saw it, especially in short series, how essential and how hyper valuable two great starters at the top of your rotation are in any series. And you got to have both of them, and you got to have them close to their best. So I'm totally with you on the fact that no matter how you go about your business, and because of the fact that going into the second half, coming out of the All-Star break, there were conflicting reports about where these other pitchers were, and it maybe kind of made you lean towards the fact that you hope to get one back. But now when you see how many guys are getting closer and closer to helping you,
yep,
6-man should definitely be in play.
I had that on my good, too. Javier looked pretty good in his rehab. The line score was good. I watched the Arrigetti 3 innings.
Okay.
He looked good. Luis Garcia, he pitched a couple of innings, 2 scoreless innings as well. He's got a new arm slot.
I saw that.
Which, I mean, look, maybe it'd help. Who knows?
And maybe look, as long as the velocity stays,
yeah.
then I'm okay with it. I just don't want him getting funky and then, you know, we see a drop in velo.
Look, what do I know about pitching? Like, I'm not the pitching ninja. I'm not Greg Maddux. I don't really like the ball at his ear. Looks very shot putty to me. Looks very Jose Urquidy to me. But I care about production. Mm-hmm. If he produces there, cool, and whatever. But I like that they're back pitching in minor league games and that they're effective. Luis Garcia pitched in two rehab assignments last year, one with the FCL team, and then he went to Corpus and pitched in a game. He got rocked and shelled and looked terrible, and then we didn't see him again. Like, he was gone forever. So it looks like it is snowballing in the right way, which is very encouraging on that
His
front.
Breaking pitches were falling off the table. They had a lot of good movement to them, and that was the biggest thing that I noticed.
And Javier's velo's up. Eric Eddie looked nasty. Like, I know he did. Double A, but he looked nasty.
Yeah, no, look, I think that I had said all along, I would, because I didn't have a lot of confidence from what they were telling us in terms of Garcia being behind Javier in terms of closeness and how close they are to coming back. When you see those three guys alone, I mean, you get those three guys who are all, when they're on top of their game, probably at worst two fours and a one, and like a two. But if you think that all three of those guys are capable of being threes or top of the rotation guys, and you return three of those guys late in the season and their arms are fresh, I'm all for that.
And look, maybe one of them has to go to the pen. Maybe two of them have to go to the pen. But it helps. Like, you're carrying 13 pitchers. You're carrying Hector Neris right now. You're carrying Lance McCullers right now. Maybe you can throw Corton Gordon into the mix. But it seems like reinforcements are on the way. Let me nerd out with some Brandon Walter stats real quick. You know I like the baseball savant. You know I like the percentiles when it comes to these pitchers. Do you want to take a guess on Brandon Walter's percentile in K percentage?
80th.
Pretty close. 70, 72. And, like, we thought this guy was, like, he's not a strikeout guy. He doesn't have this high velo. Like, he's not going to get the whiff. He's getting the whiff. Do you want to guess Brandon Walter's walk percentage? Percentile.
71st.
100. He's in the 100th percentile.
Oh, that's right.
He's in the 100. He's got 47 strikeouts against three walks, this Brandon Walter guy. Ocho's calling him the great value Tom Glavine. And it's hard to disagree.
No.
Do you want to guess his expected ERA?
299.
295. 88th percentile.
Good,
Brandon Walter is the new Dallas Keuchel. They found
that
Dallas
guy.
Keuchel. It's amazing. He's 28 years old. He didn't pitch in baseball last year. Dana Brown finds him from the scrap heap, and his baseball savant is gorgeous.
I mean, this goes to what you said about the year of Dana Brown, or I mean, on full display for all the guys he's already found that have filled holes and bridged gaps. This dude is been out of nowhere. Has been fantastic.
I am embarrassed that I compared him to Jamie Moyer. I'm embarrassed by it. This guy has been unbelievable. He's easily at this point, easily the Astros' third best starter. Easily.
I mean, we had this conversation before, but now there's no doubt that you take him over four different guys. You take him over Gordon. You take him over Gusto. You take him over Lance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been complete. Just what the doctor ordered, and no one figured out that prescription. No one knew that Dana was going to pull this guy out.
I love this guy. It was my man crush Monday. I love me some Brandon Walter. Seattle was on a heater before the break, too, so I can't blame Hunter Brown too much. Fair point. I think Hummel did a good job on the Whitcomb slide of staying close enough to the line to not allow Raleigh to get started moving across the line. That is interesting. That's a good point. I wonder if he did that on purpose. I would guess he didn't, but if he did, that's some really good heads-up base running.
Yeah, I don't know that I saw anything other than a lead blocker for the guy behind him, and then he just made sure they didn't get two outs out of the play. But, okay, I mean, if you want to give him some credit for that, I'm fine with it.
He's Mike Allstott out there. Yeah. What I didn't understand was the swing and miss strikeout and stolen base, but the runner had to go back to first. What happened with that? I was watching the game on mute, but I think that was follow-through interference.
I don't recall it.
I think it was – I can't remember the runner, but Altuve was the hitter. It might have been Short, actually. It might have been Zach Short. So he was running on the pitch. Altuve swung and missed for strike three, so he was out. The runner, I believe, was Short, stole the bag, but they made him go back to first base. I think Altuve, on his follow-through, caught Seattle's catcher with the bat. Just it doesn't matter how hard. If there's contact there – then it's follow-through interference, plays dead, runner has to go back to where he was at the time of pitch.
So it's not an out, he just has to return to the base he occupied.
Because it's not batter's interference, because he didn't affect the throw.
Okay.
But in the – well, I guess it kind of did. But it's, the follow-through is different than where he is in relation to, like, the plate on the throw. I think that's what happened. But I was watching the game on mute, didn't have a great look at it.
I watched the game. I believe it was follow-through. I guess I don't remember that.
I don't think it was yesterday. I think it might have been Saturday's game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it might have been Saturday's game, but it would follow through interference. I'm 98% sure.
Saturday we had a DVR issue, so yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been watching the games on mute while I've been up here. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HR&P, listener line. Veterans report to Texans. It's here. Texans training camp officially starts tomorrow. They'll get on the field on Wednesday. Thank you, Cal. What are you most excited for and or your training camp hot takes? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hey, it's a good time to hop into a new vehicle or pre-owned vehicle. If you're in the market, listen up. Monument Chevrolet is the dealer that you can trust. Why? Well, they're transparent. They don't hassle you with pricing. You know what you're going to get with Monument Chevrolet. And it's that transparency and trust where Monument Chevrolet has been serving the Houston area for 50 years because the customers just keep coming back to Monument Chevrolet because they trust Monument Chevrolet. These families keep coming back. Generations of these families keep coming back because they trust the people at Monument Chevrolet. What makes them great? Well, they have the family feel. They have the friendly atmosphere. They hire great people, which leads to a great culture. Get a fair deal, a fast deal, and an easy deal without wasting your time and aggravating stressful negotiations. And you want to hear the car of the week this week? The EV Blazer, 2025 EV Blazer. You can get 0% APR for 36 months. I ain't good at math, but that's 3 years. It's time to join the 21st century. Save money and style in the luxurious EV Blazer, 0% APR for 36 months. So if you're thinking about it, you're on the fence, you're wavering, now is the time to do it. No tricks, no time wasting, no hidden charges at Monument Chevrolet. Check out their inventory at monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com. Or better yet, go visit them in person, 225 and Beltway 8 at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The new ESPN Houston app is live, and it is spectacular. Download the new version. New app allows you to sign up and enter to win our giveaways. Hit the go button and you'll see the features, all the new features that will include immediate access to the text, call-in line, all of our social media platforms, even our YouTube channel. There's a chat feature in the app that listeners can use to interact with each other and the shows. And the app is now available for Android and Google Play users. So if you like to use inferior phones, the app's there for you now anyways. So check it out. That was a little bit of shade at Blakers, but I digress. Training camp begins Wednesday for the Texans, but they will report tomorrow. Veterans report tomorrow. So we're fired up. Fired up for football. I'm up to about 250 fantasy football drafts, so I'm ready to go. I'm here. What's that?
I just chuckled because I know.
I'm ready.
I believe that number, by the way.
I do.
I don't think that was an exaggeration.
A little short of 250. It's in the 225 mark.
Are these mostly the best ball ones?
Yeah, that's the only thing that's available.
They're all best balls. Yeah, I have
I have five. I'm not on Jeremy's level.
I think I only do about three, maybe four, like normal fantasy leagues. But these best balls, I'm trying to get to 500 this year.
God, that's a lot.
Trying to get up there. You know, it's if you want to.
And you made profit last year?
I did. I didn't have a great finish to the season. I had a great. I had a great regular season, kind of underperformed in the playoffs. You can call me the fantasy football version of Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson.
James Harden.
I was trying to go sport for sport, but
I got you.
You can throw James Harden into the mix. He'd be in the mix as well. But anyways, we're fired up. We're fired up for football. We all know that. Joe's
it's always fun to win.
We're fired up for football. But training camp, they'll get on the field Wednesday. Officially starts tomorrow in Veterans Report. What are you most excited for and or your training camp hot take? 713-780-3776. What do you got?
I would start by saying that as much as you know, I cringe at how many people like grasp at straws to find all these things that have to be talked about every single day. But I think that until it's solidified, the offensive line is the biggest thing I'm watching. I'm excited to see how it plays out because, for one, you take a guy like Andrews and start him at center based on what we had saw last year out of the other two guys with Scruggs and Patterson. And then all of a sudden a guy that they knew and Popovich knew from New England and also from his college days not only just get signed, but now he's penciled in right now as your starting center. So I'm curious to see how that plays out and then how the rest of the offensive line shakes out with all, everything that they've done, because until they start playing against other teams and it counts, we don't know what this line's going to be. But because it was the number one point of contention that had to be fixed, that's where everybody goes. I think two others for me that I'm keeping an eye on is I want to see how the safety positions play out simply because of the fact that regardless of what Jimmy Ward's got going on, and I just don't – I didn't want to see Jimmy Ward out there anyway, but I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out. And I'm on record from the time that it happened, and I'm a more firm believer now. I believe Chubb's going to play a role on this team as a second running back. And I think that they're going to get to the point where they can split some carries in game and they can give him more carries. I think Chubb's going to end up being a factor for this offense a little more than people might have thought when they signed him. And so I'm excited to see what he can do.
Well, how many carries do you think of Chubb? Like, if you're thinking in that vein, like how many touches a game you think he's getting?
I think early, I think he's going to get maybe 5 to 10.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's fair.
And I think that he's going to show enough that maybe by midseason they're going to give him the ball more. I just feel like, man, his work ethic and, he just looks like he's in unbelievable shape. And I think that this is a season for him to kind of put his name back on the radar of teams that he can still play this game. I just think he's going to have a really good year for them.
Not that I disagree, but permission to nitpick there?
Yeah, of course.
Which football players aren't in great shape right now?
No, like, but Jeremy, there's a difference. Like, I know guys feel like, you know, they got to ramp it up. You know, look at Mahomes and guys that take criticism for that. When you see everything that you've seen from this guy from his whole career, this dude is just like a workout freak.
He is.
And I think that that goes a long way to saying, yeah, age is a number with this guy, but I believe he's got miles left on these tires, and I think that he can prove this year that teams could make him a part of their offense and give him more money.
See, I agree with the early 5 to 10 touches, figure out what he is. I think it's prudent to have Joe Mixon on a bit of a pitch count, too.
Yep.
I don't want him wearing out by, you know, week 14. Let's not forget, he was on the IR last year. A little, the hip drop tackles a couple times cost him some games. So I think it is good to monitor Joe Mixon's workload. I think that was the reason that they not only signed Nick Chubb, but also drafted Woody Marks. Mm-hmm. I've read that Damian Pierce is a better fit for this scheme than he was under the Slowik scheme. Time will tell on that. I think there's a chance he could not be on the roster whenever, you know, the 53 men have to be decided. The hang-up that I have with Chubb, and look, I understand first year removed, major leg surgery, you're always going to be better that second year, but we're usually not talking about running backs that are close to the age of 30 whenever we discuss that. So I don't like the father time thing with Nick Chubb, and I also don't like what he produced on the field last year. Was that too early to really be forming any sort of judgments on his comeback? Perhaps. But this is his age 30 season, wasn't good in the 8 games we saw last year, just coming off major leg injury.
Well, I think that my rebuttal of that would be what he, I think, also has referred to since then, that no matter how good they get at these surgeries, it's normally about over a year before you kind of return to your old self.
Yeah.
So I would think that, yeah, and Cleveland really wanted him back, and they knew that he was a focal point before he got hurt.
Did they?
I thought that they
drafted
did.
Two running backs.
But I think that from you look at the fans, you look at their backlash, you look at the fact that what he did when he was there, that I think the Browns were kind of hoping that he could still be that guy until these young guys were ready and could do more. But I just feel like, more so as it relates to the Texans, give him that full, you know, regardless of how quickly he got back or not, give him that full year's time. Get him a fresh start somewhere with a team that wants him, that's going to, you know, that he has a chance to win with. And I think that you're going to see a different Nick Chubb.
Yeah, I hope so. Like, it would be, if Nick Chubb is 80% of who he was, even in 2022, like, okay, that's an impact running back. I am intrigued by the running back room. A lot of it's more curiosity than confidence, though. Like, Mixon, like, he had this mysterious injury in the offseason, missed a few games last year. Chubb, 30-year-old running back coming off injury. Woody Marks, a rookie. Damian Pierce, who is he? So I'm more intrigued by the running back room than I am, like, confident that they're going to be, like, a top-five room. But I do like Mixon. So I still think you're going to get a lot of production there. 713-780-ESPN. I do want to discuss that offensive line. Training camp officially opens tomorrow with the veterans returning to reporting, and then they'll get on the field on Wednesday. What are you most excited for? What are your training camp hot takes? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN, 97.5 ESPN. 92.5.
Guys, look, one of the most expensive things that you're going to have to fix on a house is your air conditioning system. And, you know, look, I know I'm right around the corner from having to get a new system. But the fact is I already know that I've got a company lined up that's going to take care of me every step of the way, because they already do so. Whenever anything goes wrong or I need any kind of service, I know the people I can trust. And honestly, I know this personally because the owner of the company is someone that was my best friend growing up that I've known for literally my entire life, John Blitz. John Blitz and Temperature Pro are the only company that I will recommend that you go and get to know, because they're going to take care of you when you need them most. When we're getting into these dog days of summer, when it's 100 degrees plus, and the last thing you can afford to do is have something go wrong with your air conditioning, that's why you go to Temperature Pro. 20 plus years of experience. Trusted, reliable, and those are the two words you got to have. Feel free to check their reviews. Their A-plus Better Business Bureau rating. They are here for you. And they have all the major brands. Trane, Daikin, Carrier, Goodman, and Lennox. And they're offering you a fantastic financing deal. 12 months, no payments, no interest. You need them now, you pay them later. It's all part of the deal of them taking care of you every step of the way. Put your AC needs in the trusted hands of Temperature Pro and my good friend John Blitz, and you will be in the best hands you can be in. Go to blitzproservices.com or just call them 281-247-5925. That's 281-247-5925. Check out the good people at Temperature Pro today.
Subscribe to ESPN Houston for free on YouTube. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
713-780-ESPN. Robbie said he's going to see us at a Cadillac Bar on Thursday. We love him. We love Robbie. Bees will be out at Cadillac Bar on Thursday as the ESPN 97.5 Summer Circuit continues. Be a lot of fun. Did you guys have fun on remote last week?
Yeah, good spots, too. McCormick and Schmick, you just can't go wrong with. And
it's so good.
I mean, the food is just outstanding. And then the old mainstay of East River 9, and the weather held up.
Was the weather good?
Yep.
Good. Yeah, I remember last time it was a bit rainy. Time we were there, but that's okay. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I'm with you on the offensive line being the top storyline, and you know it's the unknown of what this offensive line is going to be, and it's also going to be the first time we see them in pads. So like we got the whole little mini camp thing, and like okay, this is what the starters are going to look like. Maybe they're in shells. They're like going up there and like don't touch me. But this is the first time we're going to see them actually collide and try to crush each other's skulls. So how physical can they be? Does it actually hold up against one of the better defensive lines in the NFL? So I'm with you there. I hate having the offensive line conversation over and over and over again, because how many times can you say the same stuff over and over? Like, until something is tangible and real and new, where like this offensive line was bad last year, we're hopeful they're better this year. Like that's all you can say until something is actually done on the field.
But you know what, too, Jeremy? The other thing is remember last year when we were just like, we're sitting there talking about how many people just want to talk about anything Texans so desperately that they're grasping at storylines every single day. But the one thing that would stand out as a theme the rest of the season was when we got those reports early in camp that the defense was really better than the offense, that the defense was really doing things. And we were like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be about Stephon Diggs and this offense and year two of Bobby Slowick and CJ, and you're telling me the defense is actually, dare I say, dominating early on, and they were saying how much they were getting the better of the offense. And then you realize the offensive line wasn't playing great. And at the end of the year, you look back and go, maybe that was something. So at least from the offensive line perspective, you're right. It's not only that they're going to be in pads and there's going to be competition, but you're going against one of the better defenses in the league. So it's going to be real interesting to see who can actually stand out and step up when you need so many guys to do so across that line.
Yeah, no doubt. I disagree with you on the safeties thing. Like, I don't think there's a whole lot to discuss other than, like, Jimmy Ward. I'm assuming he's not going to be there, right?
Right, that's
like,
what I'm saying. I guess he's out. But a lot of people pencil him in as a starter, so I'm assuming he's out.
I feel like casuals pencil him in as a starter.
Yeah,
like, people who
be
don't
CJ
follow
and
the Texans.
And then getting CJ, and again, that the other part of that is, look, CJ Gardner-Johnson's had a pretty eventful offseason as well, but hopefully that, you know, he settles in, fits in, and then he's just the guy next to Bullock, and you're set.
Yeah, like there's no doubt in my mind that those are your two starting safeties. Now, maybe like what happens after them is very, you know, storyline worthy because like, was Jimmy Ward even going to be on this football team? I would bet he's not gonna, which, you know, is that a good or bad thing? I would probably say that's a, like, from a field, like on the field point of view between the lines, I think it's better to have Jimmy Ward on this team than off of this team, even though he's your third safety. But he'd be your third safety and your backup nickel. Maybe that's why they signed that guy.
Maybe.
It's because Jimmy Ward, they're like, okay, he's not going to be a Houston Texan this year as I start to put two and two together.
Yeah, because I'm just – look, you know me, and you guys both know that I've just been anti-Jimmy Ward. I've seen enough of him on this roster. When he's on the roster, I know he and DeMeco go a long way back, but so does his best playing days. And I think that between the injuries and the fact that I think he's lost a step – I could do without him. I'm not trying to have anybody lose their job. I could do without him. And you know, you've drafted safeties. You've got guys that are ready to possibly step up. You're looking for depth at the position. But I could do all of that without Jimmy Ward.
My biggest like wonder as we approach training camp, what does the Kaylee offense look like? Any clues we get there? Like what personnel packages are we seeing? Where's Christian Kirk lining up? Where's Jaden Higgins lining up? How much Jalen Knoll is being involved? Because I'm very intrigued how they use the receivers outside of Nico. Like Nico Collins is your dude.
Right.
But how do Higgins, Kirk, and Knoll come into play? I think that's going to be fascinating to watch. Also the formations, packages, personnel usages. And then backup tight end.
Yes, like, for sure.
Like Dalton Schultz, like neither one of us love Dalton Schultz, but I think Dalton Schultz is clearly the best tight end on this roster, at least for now. But how healthy does Brevin Jordan look? Does he pick up where he left off when he got hurt because he looked good? Mm-hmm. How does Cade Stover look in year two? I'm actually more fascinated with the backup tight end spot than I probably should be.
Well, that was on my list as well because I think that we were wondering if they were going to look to try and add any more depth at tight end. But now, because you're getting Jordan back as well, it is kind of intriguing to see if he can pick up where he left off, as you mentioned. Can he push a guy that looks like he made too many business decisions a year ago? The fact that no matter what he got paid and how good of a friend he is with CJ, you need some production out of your tight end. And it seems like in this new offense, they're going to kind of be more focused on utilizing the tight end. So I think that that is a position to watch.
Like, I think Kaylee would prefer to play more 12 personnel than like the average bear. But I don't think the roster makeup suits 12 personnel. I think it suits better, you know, 11 personnel. Because who would you rather be on the field more? And, like, I know this impacts the running game and stuff like that. But would you rather Christian Kirk or Jaden Higgins be on the field more? Or would you rather Cade Stover, Brevin Jordan be on the field more?
That's an easy one.
Exactly.
Either receiver. Yeah.
Like, I think this roster is built for 11 personnel, not 12 personnel. Which, I mean, is it round peg, square hole? Hopefully not. Hopefully Kaylee, you know. And, look, he was with McVay. Like, he's seen plenty of 11 personnel. I trust he's going to be good in 11 personnel. But, again, we haven't seen it. That's why Kaylee's offense, to me, is the biggest mystery and X factor for the Houston Texans in 2025.
And I think, Jeremy, you touched on it. If we're looking at just the overall storyline for everything with camp, it's to finally see the unseen, to see how this offense comes together, to see specifically how this offensive line is, who you're putting out there, what positions they're playing, and how they really, you know, we've been told till they're blue in the face about how this is a more together offensive line, more continuity, and they're doing all the right things. But from the offense, the offensive coordinator, and the actual people on the offense, everything comes down to everything was sight unseen until now, and now everything's going to be out there for everyone to see. Let's see what it actually looks like.
713-780-ESPN. What are your hot takes going into Texans training camp? They'll be on the field on Wednesday. Nick Caserio will be talking windows before they hit the practice field on Wednesday as well. Texans, you know, ESPN's been doing this little top 10 personnel or position deal where, like, hey, CJ Stroud's not a top 10 guy. Nico Collins is. They've been ranking top 10s based on positions. How many Houston Texans landed on the entire list? And how about where the Texans rank roster-wise in terms of skill, in terms of talent compared to the rest of the NFL? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.